Kansas City restaurants are home to all kinds of zany treats, like the skyscraper soda at Winstead's. It comes in a glass so tall, I'm not even sure that's a glass, and people go crazy for it. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, our food critics recommend the best signature desserts in Kansas City. We'll also get a personal story about the peach knee-high, a mythical dessert from Osceola, Missouri. Central Standard's Patrick Quick remembers it fondly.
Oh yeah, it's really good.
But before we serve dessert, have you made your donation to KCUR this membership drive? If not, hurry up. We're counting on you.
When I heard those words, I was like, oh yeah. Like, it just all kind of came flooding back immediately.
That's the sound Patrick Quick makes when you say the words peach knee-high. Patrick's our intern, and this was his spontaneous reaction when someone mentioned the notorious frozen dessert during a Central Standard meeting. The rest of us had never heard of it. Turns out the peach knee-high is an ice cream soda made at a little place called Scott's Iconium in Osceola, Missouri. Walking to the Iconium for a peach knee-high is a Boy Scout camp tradition that goes back to the 1970s. With a little help from the Iconium's current owner, Shannon Tucker, Patrick remembers the nostalgic treat of his childhood and Boy Scout camp.
At the time, I didn't like the idea of like scouting or camping. To me, it was like the middle of nowhere. Now I love it. I mean, now I love camping, but you know, 10-year-old me was still pretty heavy into video games and watching TV, and so it was hard to get me out. It's like a tradition for the scouts at the Bartle Reservation to like walk up to the Iconium, Scott's Iconium in Osceola, Missouri.
It's hot in the summertime, and you're out in the woods, and it's dusty, and you're dirty, and you can take a shower and walk out of the shower house and be dirty again. And you start hiking up there, and you get about a mile, I think, is where the first kind of, man, what the heck are we doing? This is too far. Why are we walking up there? And you keep telling yourself, if you're a seasoned scout, you know, you're like, well, of course, we're going up there to get a peach float.
And it did seem kind of like this weird mystical trek, because we walked from our campground to the shop, but there's, you know, it's just kind of like a campground, so it's like empty wilderness, you know, there's nothing there really other than the trail.
And all of a sudden it's a hot day, and you're like, where are these guys taking me?
And you like go up this hill.
You get to the end of the road and you turn the corner by the church, and there is the store. You can see it in the distance.
And then you see this kind of like, I don't know, it's
like this oasis coming at you. We have a window in our store. We can look down the road and we can see the look on their face when they're just dragging. Feet are dragging, and they hit that corner, and you can see all their faces looking up at the store. I swear, half the younger boys, once they hit a certain part, there's a street sign they hit, they run from there.
It's old-timey convenience store like you would imagine in the movies or something, you know. It's just like, you know, cute little porch in front and then little window on the side. It's cool. We kind of walked around, and my scoutmasters just like kind of pointed out things. We're like, this is what it was like in the old times.
The store is over 100 years old here, and you know, they're like all small town stores. They've got everything. Syconium translates to oasis. And originally it was the well in the street. And so all the old timers, if they're listening to this, they're going to remember that well. And that's the history of that well, is that that's where people came to get water from the area. Since then, it's been replaced from that coming to get water to coming to get ice cream and floats and candy.
There was an older lady that worked there, and she was pretty cute. I mean, like a cute old lady. But I remember her just like being really nice to everybody.
Ginger's the one that invented the float. She ran this store. She was here every day for 35 years. And this store is about its life. It's not about the items on the shelf sometimes. Mm-hmm. As a young man, I came up here because Ginger was here, and I liked Ginger, and she was friendly. And when you're down at camp for 10 days, away from mom, away from things as a kid, it's kind of comforting to come in the store and get a hug.
Everybody in my scout troop at the time was talking about it, and I had never had one before. I remember thinking, like, what is the big deal? Like, why is everybody standing in line for like hours.
You're waiting in line and you're waiting in line and you get to the window and they slide that glass door open and that cold air comes at you. We do that on purpose.
And then everybody just starts slamming these peach knee highs.
You've been out in the woods for 10 days, you know, you're done. And you get up there and it's quite an experience because of what you've gone through.
Get this nice little fizzy bubble and sip it down.
The peach float just sort of accidentally happened right out on the front porch there, probably 79. There was some boys out there that were eating ice cream, some staff boys at camp, and they were sitting on the front porch eating their ice cream, and Ginger, she had this pop that some distributor had dropped off that nobody would buy. She said, nobody's buying this, so she took it out on the front porch and said, hey boys, here's some free pop. And the one boy took the can and opened it up and poured it right on his ice cream. They took it back to camp, and their friends told their friends, and then their friends told their friends, and the next thing you know, there's this peach float that is the most popular thing in the whole store. The gal says, what you need, young man? He looks up and with pride says, I want a peach float. And he gets that peach float, and of course he gets it, and he takes a spoon, and he gets a little bit of ice cream mixed in with the pop, and he takes a slurp of the pop off the bottom, and he starts, his eyes start to grow, and he gets that first bite of mixed goodness is what we call it. You know, this is kind of this nectar of the gods of Iconium. And if you like, well, you like that, young man? He can't even say, yeah, all he can do is bob his head, you know, because he's so excited about what's going on. And it's hard to describe, you know, everybody thinks it's just peach and ice cream, and, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, it's the atmosphere, it's the hike up here, it's the pumping up that they've been hearing for a couple of months before they get here, and, you know, all of that creates this perfect storm of deliciousness.
That's pretty much how Patrick remembers it, too. We heard rumors that a few places serve the peach knee-high here in Kansas City. Without the mythical walk in the woods, of course, some things you just can't replicate. The other day, Patrick went to High Boy in Independence to try a peach knee-high for the first time in 18 years. The reviews were favorable.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a bite of ice cream, too.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very sweet. Very, very sweet. It's really good. Mm.
The story of the peach knee-high comes to us from Patrick Quick, who also spoke with Shannon Tucker of Scott's Iconium in Osceola, Missouri. I'm Gina Kaufman. The food critics will join us shortly to tell us about their favorite unusual desserts here in town. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and it's time for the food critics. This morning, our food critics are Charles Ferruza and Jill Silva, and they're going to tell us about the most intriguing signature desserts being served in Kansas City restaurants. Charles Ferruza of The Pitch and Fat City, hello.
Hello, Gina.
And Jill Silva, thanks for stopping by from the Kansas City Star and the Chowtown blog.
Thank you so much, Gina.
Charles, start us off. Tell us about the hot dessert soufflés at Café Provence.
You know, you would think... And Jill, you're probably a big fan of Café Provence as well, but it's a sweet little restaurant in Prairie Village, and you would think that they would have, you know, dessert souffles all the time, but they only have them on Monday nights because they're labor intensive. And that's a good show-off dessert, you know. You want to take somebody there and show off and have a nice Grand Marnier hot souffle.
I betray my ignorance, but I don't know how to make a souffle. What's so labor intensive about them?
I will turn to Jill for that, but isn't it because they have to be carefully monitored once they go in the oven? Because they can fall.
Right. It's all about the timing. You've got to serve that thing right away, and you've got to make sure that those eggs were whipped to just the perfect point. And so
I mean,
they
I've
deflate
never,
like a basketball.
Absolutely. And I've never made a hot souffle that hasn't fallen. But when you have an ancient oven like I do, I mean, I'm lucky to be able to heat a piece of toast. Yes.
But back to those.
They're beautiful, beautiful souffles. They're fluffy and airy and big, and they do pretty much deflate once you stick a spoon in there, but they're delicious.
So are there different kinds of souffles or just one signature souffle?
No, they've got several kinds, and they tend to vary on Monday nights, but there's almost always a chocolate souffle of some kind and a Grand Marnier souffle, which I'm happy to say that the liquor is cooked out of it.
So that's at Café Provence in Prairie Village?
Absolutely.
Jill, what can you recommend? How about a Peruvian specialty?
Well, there is a new Peruvian restaurant that came in town, and it's right very close to my house in Lenexa on Quivira and about 79th. It's called Antojitos del Peru.
That's a beautiful name. What does it translate as, Jill?
I think it means snacks of Peru. Okay. At least that's what they told me. So maybe they're simplifying a little bit, but that's pretty close. And they have entrees too, but I was really attracted to their Pio Nono because I grew up with Peruvian friends a street away, and they used to bring us over Pio Nono. And what this wonderful dish is, it's so simple. It's just sponge cake with dulce de leche. You roll it, then you slice it, and you serve the roulade with powdered sugar on top. It's just simple, you know, just really simple, but very...
Is it served cold?
It is, yeah.
I bet it's great with coffee.
It would be fabulous with coffee, yeah. So I really enjoy that, and it's just sort of a nostalgic thing because I grew up with it.
And so tell us the name and location of that restaurant again.
Antojitos del Peru, and it's at 79th and Quivira, near Fronteras Grill and La Paleteria on that corner.
Is that the Fronteras? No, that was the one in...
Not the one in Olathe.
The one that burned down, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But the dessert that people should get there is called the Pio Nono.
Pio Nono, yeah.
That sounds so good.
It's fun to say, isn't it?
It is.
I like desserts that are fun to say.
Well, dessert is something... I think, you know, we associate it with celebrations for obvious reasons, so it kind of gets wrapped up in, I don't know, traditions and rituals and nostalgia that may not even... You know, if you aren't there for the origins, it may not even make sense from the outside. If you think about birthday cake, it's, in my opinion, really not very good. But I don't want to test my luck by starting a year without it. What do you think about desserts and ritual, you guys?
It's funny you should say that because I'm not a big birthday cake fan either. I would take any other possible dessert as a birthday celebration. None of which are coming to mind. Well, even a piece of pie. But yeah, it adds a festive note, I think, to any meal. You know, that, well, I behaved myself. I ate my vegetables. Let me have a piece of cake.
Do you think that's why the idea of a signature dessert is something that happens kind of with some regularity? Just the idea that even within the small community of a restaurant, there comes to be some kind of tradition or some kind of, I don't know, festive thing that evolves around a dessert.
Well, I like a signature dessert that really is a dessert that you can't find anywhere else or frequently. When I used to work at the Athena restaurant at 3535 Broadway, it was one of the very, very few restaurants in Kansas City where you could get a slab of galette burrica, which is the custard baked in phyllo pastry. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have a piece right now. It's really good for breakfast. But, you know, and people loved that because they couldn't find it anywhere else. And, you know, some of the things that Jill has on her list, you can't find these, I don't think, anywhere but these restaurants you mentioned.
And we'll get to some more of those. Jill, is there something else you'd like to talk about now? One of the other recommendations you've made today?
Well, talking about it kind of ties into ritual, and also what Charles is saying is that I do kind of have a thing for interesting ethnic foods and particularly desserts, because while they're not unusual for the country of origin, they are unusual usually to Americans.
And to Kansas City.
And so I'm married to a Brazilian, so I love something called brigadeiros, which are these little chocolatey bonbons, and they're made with one can of that condensed milk, which is super sweet, gobs of butter, and processed Dutch chocolate, just Dutch cocoa. And then you get them and roll them and put them in those little jimmies, those little sprinkles.
People
have different names for them.
I've always called them jimmies.
Heard jimmies. Sprinkles. Okay, go
sprinkles.
On.
Sprinkles. And, you know, so then they're like a little bonbon. Well, the one at Taste of Brazil is actually almost softball size for a...
What?
No,
really?
I'm kidding. Ping pong ball size. Let's put it that way. It is a big brigadeiro, but it's very caramely, it's very sweet, and it's very... every celebration in Brazil must have these brigadeiros. And it's interesting that Häagen-Dazs just did a flavor called brigadeiro that's rolling out this month, and it's from a brigadeiro store in New York City, so...
Does that word... Brigadeiro, does it, I'm sorry for my pronunciation, but does it have a meaning in Portuguese other than the name of this?
Yeah, I was wondering, it sort of sounds like brigadier, you know?
It kind of does.
Is there a military component?
I don't think so, but you know what? It's too bad I didn't ask my husband about that. I've just been popping these in my mouth for so many years. I didn't even think to ask.
Jill, they sound really rich.
Super rich.
Like maybe you could eat one.
One would be good. Okay. Yeah. And if you're going to make your own, you might want to make them pea-sized as opposed to ping pong ball size. But, you know, they come in various sizes.
And that's at Taste of Brazil in the City Market.
In the City Market, yes.
Charles, tell us about the London Fog Pie.
Well, I think all of the pies that are that the owner of the Lady Bird Diner makes are great. But this was the most unusual one that I tasted. It's a lavender cream pie, which immediately at first put me off. But I don't like desserts that taste like herbs. But it was flavored with lavender and Earl Grey tea. And it was really very subtle and very lovely. Now, she also does a basil blueberry pie that I didn't think I was going to like, but what a great combination that was.
I like these kind of change-ups. Yeah. I don't know about you.
And then the other pie she has frequently is an ancho cherry pie.
Charles, where is this again?
Lady Bird Diners in Lawrence on Massachusetts Avenue. Forgive me for saying that, for forgetting to say that.
Hello again. This is Central Standard, and it's a Friday food show. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today, our topic is signature desserts, many of which also happen to be unusual desserts. Those specialty items you can only get in a certain place. Our critics today are Charles Ferruza and Jill Silva. So, Jill, you're recommending a spin on creme brulee, but before we launch into your particular recommendation, what are some of the nuances to consider when evaluating one creme brulee against another?
Well, I think just for me, and I bet Charles will agree with this, the top has to shatter. If you have something that's a little gooey and it's been sitting around for too long, I don't even want to eat it. Not worth it. You want to take that spoon, crack that top, get those shards, and then you want a really nice custard. Vanilla's the predominant flavor these days, but some of the herbal ones are kind of fun too. And so if you can infuse that custard with something that's a little extra, I enjoy that as well.
So you're recommending Torched Goodness out of Lawrence. Tell us about that.
Yeah, they're a food truck, and they have focused on, strangely enough, creme brulee. And they will torch it right there on site, and they have lots of different flavors to try.
What's your favorite?
I just went with the traditional to check it out, and I like that. But I also really enjoy the lavender. And, you know, that sounds funny, flowery flavor, but no, I do enjoy that flavor quite a bit, and it's really subtle.
So is it partly the food truck combined with the creme brulee that makes this creme brulee stand out, like just that it's a different approach to serving it and enjoying it, that it's outside of that fine dining kind of setting?
Absolutely. I think it's that taking something that's sort of very fine dining.
A little precious.
Yeah, a little precious, exactly, and taking that to the people. Taking it to the streets, as they say.
With a torch.
Yeah. And I mean, who doesn't like to watch actually seeing the dessert torched? I mean, in a lot of restaurants, you don't really get to see that. But
because a lot of restaurants don't really do it.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So that's Torched Goodness out of Lawrence. You've also got another spin on classics on your list. It's an ice cream by Christopher Elbow.
Yeah. I was just in talking with Christopher. It's just about ice cream season, as he calls it. I put quotes around that. I love that. And he's getting ready for some new flavors. And he said he had been doing a lot of experimenting with the vegetable thing lately. And one of the ones that he's interested in and really liked and we sampled was the carrot ginger pineapple sorbet. And it's really quite...
That sounds kind of good.
Delicious, yeah. And it's really got a lot of that ginger zing to it because Chris really enjoys that flavor. So it's tingly, kind of hot on your tongue.
And I would think the pineapple would cut that sweetness of the carrot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Delicious.
While we're talking about ice cream, just quickly, we've been teasing this show with the sound of the skyscraper soda being delivered to a table at Winstead's. That is a classic Kansas City tradition, no matter what you think of it from a culinary standpoint. But I wonder what you guys do think of it.
I don't think I've had one since I moved to town in the 80s, but I remember the first time I saw one. Visually, it's so scrumptious, you know? Visually, it's so impressive.
I haven't actually had one, but I watched a group of band kids devour one. And that was enough for me. It was just loads of fun to see these kids go after this gigantic
The thing sundae. There is presentation, kind of as we were saying before with the food truck, that it's like there's a specialness to how this thing is delivered, even though it's really maybe just kind of a tall ice cream soda. We put out a query on Facebook about what our listeners' favorite desserts are, favorite signature or unusual desserts, and we heard from someone that there's mousse in a shot glass at Seasons 52.
Well, many shot glass desserts there, and I think more than one
all
mousse.
All of them are, aren't
and
they?
You know what? Yeah, because they're not very many calories, if I remember. And it's sort of like, you know, and I kind of like the idea from a concept form, but, you know, they give you these little tiny spoons, if I remember, and you eat these little tiny desserts.
You don't shoot them?
Well, it'd be hard because they're semi-solid at least, but they're cute. They're like little doll desserts, which, you know, for someone of my heft, forget it. But I want a dessert.
Any other presentations in Kansas City?
I want to go on to the subject of presentations because, you know, I was sort of saying that when we started the show or before the show, I don't like desserts that are too unusual or too weird or too precious. That's the right word, probably. And during the whole, when tiramisu was like the big dessert in town, I got so tired of seeing it in champagne glasses or in a tower form or this or that. To me, tiramisu just needs to be a slab, okay? You know, you don't need to cutes it up. But and I'm glad that phase seems to have passed, or has it?
I think so. I'm not seeing as much tiramisu, but what I am seeing is s'mores. Are you seeing a lot of s'mores?
I'm so tired of s'mores.
Yeah. And I'm, some of them are good. What I think is more interesting is when they deconstruct them and kind of do something interesting with it, as opposed to
quickly,
to make
Jill,
it.
Can you name a place that does that?
Jack's. Fish House in
yeah,
Kansas
I did
City
like that
has
dessert.
A nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah, a nice one. And, you know, it's real deconstructed. Looks like a painting.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard, and we've got just a little time left to talk about signature desserts at Kansas City restaurants. I'm sitting here with Charles Ferruza of The Pitch and Jill Silva of The Star. Charles, it's your turn to recommend something. The show's almost over, and a Friday night is on the way, so it is okay to make me hungry for something really, really decadent.
Well, I think that one of the more decadent desserts in Kansas City is the Chocolata del Morta at Jasper's, which is a chocolate mousse surrounded by chocolate brownie with chocolate sauce and a chilled Grand Marnier Zabillon, which is a...
Is the dish chocolate? The serving dish?
That would have been overkill, I think. But, you know, my favorite dessert at Jasper's, which now can become my favorite dessert again because I wouldn't eat it for a long time because it had strawberry liqueur in it, which is very potent. And I don't drink. And then I found out this week that the famous strawberry cake there doesn't use strawberry liqueur anymore. It's strawberry syrup.
So that works out if you're avoiding alcohol.
I tell you, I was in seventh heaven. I practically burst into tears from excitement.
But tell me more about this chocolate,
well,
I mean,
it's
everything it's, chocolate thing you're describing.
Except for the Grand Marnier Zabillon, which is like a pudding, but it really is a good sharing dessert. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to share desserts, me being one of them. And but it's so rich that it really almost has to be shared.
I love sharing desserts. I think it's very romantic.
Well, you have a romantic life. I don't. I might feel otherwise.
Chocolata del Morta,
yeah,
which, I mean...
translates as death by chocolate, which, you know, any dessert that has death in it is always sort of an interesting wake-up call.
Okay. So that's at Jasper's.
Yes.
And do people go there specifically for that?
Well, you know, they're one of the last restaurants that I can think of in Kansas City that still has a dessert cart, a gigantic dessert cart, and with lots and lots and lots of things on it. I mean, you got to love them just for that.
You do.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got some listener recommendations from Facebook, and I want to bring up another one of those. We're getting some that are like things you can order in a lot of places, but they're done in a very particular way at a particular restaurant, like peach cobbler at Niecy's. Have either of you had the peach cobbler at Niecy's?
Many times.
Yes.
What is so particular about it?
Well, it does really taste homemade.
It does. We ran the recipe a couple years ago, and it
in the Star.
Yeah,
I can confess I stole it.
It doesn't
from you.
Yeah,
from
and it does include canned peaches, which you might think maybe fresh, but that makes it a year-round dessert.
I think canned peaches are better in a cobbler because they're softer.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it has a really nice flaky crust, and it's a top crust only though.
And do you think that it's sort of? When I think about some of these desserts, I think about the idea of Kansas City pride, like that there's almost like these are our places. And so like is Niecy's like Kansas City's peach cobbler?
Sure. I think, one of them.
I mean, I was going to say the Peachtree Buffet used to have, I haven't been in a while, but it used to have the best peach cobbler and the best, if they have it, a good pear cobbler too.
Veering off a little in the more unusual direction, Jill, I hear that you have tried recently some bacon shortbread.
I did. Unfortunately, it's not widely available, but Ferran Audria, the world-famous chef, was in Kansas City for the Nelson exhibit, Notes on Creativity, and I got to travel around with him. And we went to Happy Gillis for lunch, and they tried to serve him three courses of foods that they really, Josh and Abby Joe really enjoy.
And those are the
owners.
The owner-operator,
right.
Chef people.
And yes, exactly. And they, they serve down-home food, and the end piece was a lovely cookie studded with bacon, made with bacon fat, shortbread cookie, and it was delicious. And I would hope one day it would be on their menu. But
so do they use bacon fat, Jill, instead of butter?
Yeah.
Okay, how interesting.
Well, it might be a combination. I should probably quiz a little more. But, a little bit of that bacon fat goes a long way, and it just had a really lovely flavor.
Hmm. Are there any local signature desserts of times gone by that you guys would like to memorialize on this show today?
Prune whip.
Prune whip where? That sounds disgusting.
It does sound disgusting, and actually it was. But it's an old-fashioned dessert that you never, ever see on menus anymore, and Leona Yarborough's used to have it.
Where was that?
Well, it started out in Prairie Village, and then it went to Lenexa, and then it died a sad and inglorious death. But prune whip was a very popular 1930s and 40s dessert because not only was it sweet and kind of fluffy, but it kept you regular.
Jill, any memorializing of local signature dishes that people might remember and think fondly on?
Well, I probably don't have as much history with that as Charles does, but we were talking about Jell-O during the break, and I do remember as a kid, just about any cafeteria that you went to, and mind you, we only really ate at cafeterias ever growing up.
Well, so did I growing up. Because they were cheap and you didn't have to tip.
Yeah, well, and my dad just hated to eat out, and pointing was, whatever. So that was easier, But those little squares of Jell-O sitting in those little Sunday cups, do you remember those?
They're the fondest memory ever, And the big choice was, should I get lime or should I get cherry?
I always watched my brothers and tried to get what
they didn't get.
So that mine would be better. Ha. Huh.
Some of the things that are... Producer Jen Chen discovered when she was doing some research for the show, there are just drinks like the Spanish coffee at La Bodega where they light it on fire. Things being on fire, can that be a dessert ritual?
Well, that very much was for a long time because there were restaurants in Kansas City, EBT, I think, being one of them, that had Cherry's Jubilee, Jasper's used to too, and Bananas Foster, which I can't think of one restaurant in town that still does those, where they were tableside service, flambé, and... for one thing, the insurance rates of a restaurant that does them are very high right now. But those were classic 50s desserts.
Have you had the Spanish coffee at La Bodega?
I have. Yeah. It's really very much a spectacle. They flame the glass and sparks are flying, and it's just really quite a show.
Have you guys tried the painted table desserts at Au Fair?
I've seen them. I don't think I've had one.
I've heard about them. I need to check them out.
But we should put a shout out because Affair does have lovely, lovely desserts.
What's your signature dessert, Charles?
That I make at home?
Yes.
I make an apple cake that my Aunt Mary taught me how to make. And I like to make coffee cakes. And I like to make a lemon cake. I call it lemon a la Gina.
Years ago, I found a recipe from Stephen Reichlin, the big barbecue guy. And it was for a Caribbean... pantry book, and it was flan with coconut, and I heaped the rum in there, and I only used the best reserve rum, and so that's my signature gif. Flan.
I've got that book too,
flan.
And I've always wanted to make it, but it looks complicated.
That's it for the week on Central Standard. Charles Ferruza, thank you, and Jill Silva, great recommendations this morning. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays by Jen Chen. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs.